From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm Hunter Deucing, and joining me for this first video episode, not the first airing one, okay, is Mr. Stuart Balk in Haddonfield, Illinois. Say hello, Stu.
Oh, shit.
Hey.
And joining us from the Game of Death, ready... He's getting ready to go fight Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. We have John Grace. Say hello, John.
Hello from the third level.
Thanks. Third level.
Temple of the Unknown.
So we recorded a show about Fear City with the amazing podcasters Low Res and Hans from Movies, podcast about the act of cinema. And, well, it was our first time doing a video podcast. We were using Zoom and some technical screw ups mean the show is gone. So we're doing this show as a last minute thing to have a show this week, but it's also a first video episode for us to work the kinks out. But, you know, we've got a little bit of a visual component here too for a new bit we wanted to do. So, you know, we thought we'd try it out. All right. So Stuart, why don't you introduce us to this bit? Because this was your idea.
Okay, so now that we've gone the video, and just to clarify as well, the audio segment of the podcast is still will still be available. So you use your haunts, you'll find them. It's not being replaced. This is now the video is just now accompanying with the audio that you've had for all those years. So you can now watch us on YouTube, and this segment I'm about to announce or speak about pays to that, because what we're going to do is a segment called Whip Out Your Junk. No, we're not going to literally do that. So, okay, just hold your horses. But what we're going to do, and this episode is going to be a full one of those, where what we're going to do is show our purchases for that week that we've gotten in, whether online, into your house, or at a store, at a bricks and mortar store, whatever it is. And it'll just be a mini segment that we'll do for about 5-10 minutes tops at the start of the episode before we get into the main topic of the episode for that week. So we'll get it out the way. And we are going to do a show on it today. It won't be long, fellas, guys and girls. It's about an hour, you know, just to get an idea of what it's like. And it won't be this long each week. Like I said, 5-10 minutes tops. Just and it helps to show it on there instead of me saying, hey, I picked up this release here from Umbrella. Okay, that's great. It's called this, and you have to go online and look for it, or Hunter with his Arrow titles. No offense, brother, but you know what I mean. So you can actually see it. We'll hold it up to the screen to show you this is what it is, and you can go, oh, okay, cool. It looks interesting. I'll pick it up, or I'll look into it, instead of hearing about it and then having to look it up in a Google search, etc. It makes it easier. So that's what that is. The other segment we're doing, we will announce later on, but it will also be a new weekly segment, and it's very cool. Trust me, I've heard it. These boys have not, but it's very, very cool. So, yeah, but that's what Whip Out Your Junk will be, the full thing today, but a mini segment each week.
Yeah, we're going kind of long. We're going kind of long today.
Yeah.
So who wants to go first?
Call this a primer, actually, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah, so who wants to go first?
John?
Sure. Why not? Just stuff I got this week. came in last week, but it's what everybody's getting right now. New York Ninja.
Mm.
The from Vinegar Syndrome, which is like this big, expensive package they've done on a movie they rescued. Apparently the reels, unedited, no sound, came with the an acquisition of the 21st Century Distribution Library, a indie company out of New York in the 80s. And it turned out when they examined the reels, it was this previously unknown film that had John Liu, the Hong Kong Taiwanese kung fu star of the 70s, who was known for his great kicking ability, making a ninja movie in New York City in 1984.
And he's as good as Casanova Wong at kicking.
I don't think he's as good as Casanova Wong. Casanova Wong's actually a strong looking kicker. He's bad news. I do like John Liu. His interesting style, and so his Hong Kong Taiwanese movies are a lot of fun. The stuff he made outside of Hong Kong, Taiwan, he married a French woman and ended up making, I think, two movies in Europe, one movie in Mexico, and somehow got the contracts to do this movie in New York. Cause I think his imported dubbed Kung Fu movies like The Dragon, The Hero, and Kung Fu Commandos, that I think they were very successful at 42nd Street. So some New York distributor must've gotten the idea, hey, why don't I contact this guy and make a movie with him and film it here in New York, you know, for the New York audiences or whatever. And they've assembled the film. John Liu wanted nothing to do with the movie, with them Vinegar Syndrome finishing this product. And he's living apparently off the grid in Vietnam, like in a boathouse with no electricity. So wants nothing to do with the internet or whatever. I guess he's like 80 years old and still throwing roundhouse kicks at trees or something. And they finished this movie. So they got like genre actors like Don the Dragon Wilson to dub John Liu. Linnea Quigley, I think, dubs the female lead. Cynthia Rothrock dubs the female cop. So they got a really cool electronic score from this band, I believe somewhere in the Midwest. And they did an outstanding job rescuing a film where they did not have a script. They did not have a soundtrack. And what's funny is they contacted a friend of mine, Carl Morano, who had worked on this film as a makeup effects artist. He goes, wait, I worked on that movie. I've got the script. And he gave the editor the script, you know, the guy assembling this film together. And the script made no sense. It didn't even match the footage they shot. So he says, you know what? It's probably good I didn't have the script to work with while I was, you know, working on this, because what I got actually works out well. And it's bizarre because it's like, it's John Liu, one of these innovative Hong Kong, Taiwanese, Kung Fu, martial arts actors. But keep in mind, like, the movies he made in Taiwan and Hong Kong had great choreographers, like Yin Wu Ping choreographed some of his movies, you know, back in the 70s before he was a name. It's like he had really good skilled editors and directors. So when you bring those skills to New York without the editors, choreographers, the directors, it looks really awkward to see John Liu doing his leg tricks on street hoods who look like they're from Death Wish 3. So it looks like a trauma movie almost, or something like almost a preview of what the trauma films would look like. And it's really strange because it's very kid friendly, like there's a lot of kids, but there's also like nudity and like grindhouse stuff. It's a real bizarre mixture. It's for fans of that decade of weird cinema made out of New York, but it's fun. They did an outstanding job. I'm still going through the commentary. It's very informative, a lot of fun. The making of documentary is really cool. They have interviews with that band, and there's a booklet that comes with it, tells the whole story from the editor who put this all together. It's quite a miracle. I mean, they could save any movie if this could be done for this type of film, just with the raw elements. The other stuff I got, let me dig through here.
Is that one worth getting, John? Because it looks pretty cool. The package looks awesome.
I think it's worth getting if you are a fanatic for packaging. I'm not, but I have to admit, I was pretty blown away when I opened the box. I didn't know it was going to look like this.
I got to say, Vinegar Syndrome, they're like the Criterion Collection of trash. Like most of their movies garbage. Are total garbage. Trash schlock. Like I'm in some Vinegar Syndrome collectors groups, and they talk about like, oh, you know, like you like good movies, you know. they all like acknowledge these movies are terrible, but their packaging game blows everyone out of the water.
They're unbeatable. Everyone stuff is packaged better than Arrow. Like, I'm
the
waiting
Beastmaster,
to see if Arrow can top it. You know,
the Beastmaster 4K is like mind blowing. The Six String Samurai 4K.
Really?
Yeah, it's insane. Wow. And even their slip covers murder every other company slip covers. Their slip covers are nice.
It's really? Unreal. Like they must have some good subcontractors or some good outsourcing for this stuff.
Something.
It is phenomenal. And
I bought Wacko on Blu-ray from Vinegar Syndrome, and there was a slipcover option, but I didn't like it. I thought, I didn't go for that. I just
bought the slipcovers are made out of, it's just like, ooh, like it feels good. Okay. You know, they look good. I got the Alien from LA Blu-ray, and it had this nice shiny slipcover. It just was nice. It's good.
Okay.
Yeah. The movie sucks, but you know.
Oh, but to give you an idea of how bad New York Ninja is, although it's entertaining to watch, it was when it was finished, they put together, well, when it was shot, they put together a promo reel to try to sell it to investors because 21st Century didn't care about it anymore. They had a regime change, I guess, in the executive branch. And they said, hey, can we sell this to like Canon or something? Isn't it kind of like the junk they do? And Canon Films looked at the promo reel. I was like, no, thank you.
Oh my gosh.
It looked cheap. It looked cheaper than their American Ninja movies. They didn't want to deal with it. And John Liu had already left for like France or whatever, went back there.
When Golan and Globus say no.
Yeah.
Yeah. That hurts.
Yeah.
Are you even a movie?
But it's really like a party movie. It's like, this is probably going to play great when they screen it at Alamo Drafthouse and you got a big crowd there that likes this type of stuff. And if the Alamo like ends that stupid, hey, if you laugh too loud at this, you're banned for life or whatever.
They'll have it at a quote along, you know, right. You're encouraged to be like a character from MST3K or something. You know?
Right. Oh God. Oh jeez. I've never attended those. I never want to.
No.
The other cool arrival today, actually just arrived today. See if I can get a decent look at this. Is the 88 Films Chinese Boxer. It's the first of their region-free or American-friendly region-coded Blu-ray releases of the Shaw Brothers Library, which they've acquired. And they started with the Chinese Boxer, Jimmy Wang Yu movie. That's actually the first like real kung fu movie that started the whole genre.
Nice.
Because before this, you either had the Wong Fei Hung movies, which to me are kung fu films, but you show them to somebody today, they're going to be like, what's this creaky stuff, you know? You see those, they're good movies, but their themes show up later in the later Lau Kar Lung comedies and stuff. I don't think it's going to resonate to people as a kung fu film. The Chinese Boxer is like the first, okay, these Japanese have come into the village. They've killed my teacher. They're bullying us. I'm going to learn this killer technique. To take out, you know, take out the damn Jap school or something, whatever. Yeah, yeah. But here, I think it's Iron Palm or something. Like, I think he, believe Jimmy, like, I haven't watched it yet, but he, like, and I haven't seen it in years, but he, like, burns his hand in the coals or whatever and toughens up his fist. But Lo Li is the villain.
Yes.
Great basic. I mean, to tell you the truth, okay, Jimmy Wang Yu always said Bruce Lee was ripping off his films when he hit it big. And it's true. I mean, this is like the Chinese Connection 3 years before it was made.
Yeah, same plot.
And it started the whole thing. The audience would go. He had made other like bloody revenge movies. And some people would say the One-Armed Swordsman started the genre, but they're sword films. And that's why you didn't see a lot of them imported over here in the 70s and dubbed in English, because they didn't think audiences over here would want to see a sword film, you know, with the blood and all that. They wanted hand-to-hand fighting and kicking and all this stuff that kids could imitate on the playground and injure each other and cause civil lawsuits. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. It was the 70s. That didn't happen back then.
Hunter.
But
Hunter, John. Try and cast your mind back 11 years. Did I like One-Armed Swordsman when we did it back on the Golden Temple?
Yeah.
I think I did. Didn't I?
I think you did.
Boxer's Omen, I didn't like.
You liked everything about 36 Chamber except the ending.
The ending.
Yeah. I think you thought Magic Blade was okay. Mm-hmm.
Double Grandma.
One-Armed Swordsman, I think you liked. I think it was just Boxer's Omen that you had a violent reaction to.
Well, yeah.
Blame me.
No, not really. Interesting enough, one of my son's favorite Jimmy Wang Yu films is The One-Armed Swordsman. He's seen it like 5 or 6 times. He loved it. So for people to say, oh, young people or, you know, somebody not looking for intellectual entertainment isn't going to dig One-Armed Swordsman. No, people tend to dig it. They like that spaghetti Western vibe and that kind of dark theme and color and everything. And, you know, these back in the 60s, well, even the 70s, the color in these films, the way they were photographed, they look amazing, especially when they're remastered. So I'm looking forward to digging on this, you know.
One-Armed Swordsman was like watching Fistful of Dollars or something. It has that vibe where you watch it for the first time and you go, okay, I want more of this. I want to find more of this type of thing.
Yeah, It's got that mood. It's got the stolen Japanese soundtrack music from Akira Ifukube that they swiped off of Godzilla versus what the hell, whatever the hell, you know, or a Zatoichi soundtrack. Because back in the 60s, Shaw's just stole the music. In the 70s, they made a deal with DeWolf Library and actually got legit, you know, British film library scores that you could also hear on shows like The Sweeney and movies like Monty Python and the Holy Grail, but it works great for Shaw Brothers. I always said the big mistake that RZA made with Man with the Iron Fist is he didn't, instead of putting stupid Wu-Tang music on the soundtrack, he should have just done DeWolf Library music, just like a Shaw Brothers film. Would have worked perfect.
There were a lot of mistakes made with that movie.
A whole bunch, including making the film in the first place. Don't disrespect my genre that I love by saying, I'm going to make a tribute to the genre, and it has none of the elements we like about those films. They're not there at all.
Did he try too hard? Did he try too hard? I've not seen it. Did he try too hard?
No, he's just inept. He didn't. Okay. He had all this money. He could make a nice-looking film. They shot it in China. They had a pretty big budget. But it doesn't have any of the elements that make the 70s films he's trying to pay tribute to work, like the DeWolf Library music, the really nice kung fu choreography. There's no kung fu in the film.
No, there's none.
Watch it, it's just gore and flying around. And I was told an editor decided, they made a decision. They was like, it might have been Eli Roth, that nobody wants kung fu. Nobody wants these animal styles and stuff, these shapes. They want flying around and gore. That's what Americans love about this stuff, which is just not true.
It feels like a fantasy movie that has that sort of hipster, you know, early teens vibe where it's like we're making a genre movie. We're making a kung fu film, and it's gonna be kind of weird and out there, and it's the RZA, and it's kind of it's hip, you know.
Right.
Kind of like Hobo with a Shotgun a little bit.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
You know, like it's not as egregious as that film, but it's one of those things where it's selling itself as something, but you don't really get that. You just get a bunch of hipster crap. I think the RZA, I think he went in wanting to make a certain kind of movie, but I think he had a bunch of people around him who are Alamo Drafthouse hipster types, like Eli Roth, who were probably, you know, had a little too much influence over him.
I think they did.
You know, so I think that's what I think the RZA probably wanted to, but I just don't think he was competent enough to really assert himself on that. So
no, he did no experience, just couldn't do it. And a Facebook friend of mine who is was a casting director for the film, he said, we shot two movies worth of kung fu scenes and none of them are in there.
That's nuts. Release the RZA cut.
Right, exactly. Let's go back and re-edit that thing.
Get Walter on it.
Yeah, because they got all these cool actors in it and stuff who worked in a lot of the old films, and there's nothing there. There's no, like, I think Batista, and it's a bad sign when he's in your movie, he's like, oh, where did you learn the tiger claw or something like that? And I'm like, what tiger claw? I didn't see anything. What the hell is he talking about? You know, as fans of the genre, we see this stuff. We look at the choreography. We kind of study it, you know, and in our mind, we see it like almost in slow motion. We get into the rhythm and everything. And, you know, that's how fans are. And they're talking about animal styles we never see. It's a terrible film. And some people are just like, oh, I like it because it pays tribute to the genre. How? It's not there.
I when I went to see it, I kind of went, this isn't the movie that I thought it was going to be.
The trailer was good. I was excited. That was all amped up. I go, oh, he'll get it right. No,
oh, I got friends together. I was like, let's go see this movie. It's going to be good.
Yeah, I went home and wrote like a script treatment for a kung fu movie right away just to see if I could do something better with an actual story. And strangely enough, it did get faxed to a certain producer in Hong Kong who's been cast banished from Hong Kong. But, you know, I'll tell that story some other time when a few people are dead. So, you know.
All right. You got any more, John?
Let's see. Got one that I got a few weeks ago. If you can see this, Troublemakers. It's also known as The Fight Before Christmas. This is, I believe it is a Danish Blu-ray of the Terrence Hill, Bud Spencer final Trinity film that they couldn't call Trinity because for legal reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I have not watched it yet. I'm going to watch it this week. I'm actually pretty excited to see this. And Ruth Buzzi plays their mom, so you know it's comedy heaven. And It's I believe it was filmed in either New Mexico or Arizona. It's actually shot in the States. So and using an American crew and everything. But I remember this being a really fun movie. So I'm excited. You know, they make kids films that adults can enjoy, and with always the best soundtracks. So I can look back on their legacy and enjoy it in HD now, you know, Blu-ray transfers.
So by kids movies adults can enjoy, you mean that it's a kids movie, but it makes references to The Matrix and other current properties that are out in theaters right now? Is that what you mean?
No, not like this other
DreamWorks production.
This is kind of organic. No, yeah. Organic. It's own thing. Like what a kids movie would be in the 60s or 70s, you know.
It makes references. That's how you know.
Yeah, before we got into this self-referential postmodern nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're a Terrence Hill Bud Spencer fan, you got to get it. You can find it on eBay. There might even be an Amazon dealer selling it right now. Just look up Troublemakers Blu-ray, and you know, it's cheap, and I believe it's region free. Play on anybody's Blu-ray player if you like these guys. If you don't like these guys, and you're as old as us, or basically if you're even like 20, you're not going to get it. If you didn't see these guys when you were a kid, you will not understand it. It's the chances are not good. I know our friend Nez doesn't care for these films. And right. Like, he didn't watch them when he was a kid. So,
Stu, do you want to go or do you want me to go?
I can go.
Okay.
I'm good. I just have to reach over and 1 second. So in last week, there were a couple of things that came in. We've got this, and I only got this because I knew it wouldn't last in print forever. And never got a VHS or a DVD release, but I got a Blu-ray. Gongshou movie. I'm going to have to kill my Michael Myers.
Yeah, it gets hard to show stuff, the virtual background.
He's not a fan of it. So.
Yeah, Mike killed that DVD or Blu-ray or whatever it was.
Michael kills everything.
Yeah, he got Michaeled.
Yeah, none. All right, so we'll try this now. And it's that, the Gongshou movie.
Oh, hey.
Oh, wow. Whoa. Right.
Chuck Barris.
Chuck Barris.
See that, Lawrence? There you go.
Yep. 1980. Watched it the other day, and it's an oddity, that's for sure. It's strange. I've seen it once before. Played on cable once in 2001 here. I recorded it, albeit full screen. Didn't look great, but it sat in my basket in my Amazon cart forever. I thought, I better get it, because once it goes, and I don't want to start looking at it for 70, 75 bucks onwards, because it's just not worth that. I got it for 27 bucks. I'm going to give prices with things I paid for, just because that's the way I am. No features on it, except for an audio commentary, which I've not heard yet. Next up, I finally got this Creature from the Black Lagoon set.
Got Clint's first appearance.
Yeah. It does.
Hey, mouse in his pocket.
Hey, I got this mouse in my pocket.
Hear that, Lawrence? My son's cat came down to visit on the show.
Yeah. And I bought this, and I held off buying this because the 3D version of the Revenge of the Creature, the second one, was severely messed up with the first run. And there was people screaming about it on Blu-ray.com forums, which proves that at times that forum actually can be very useful instead of the day one idiots on there. So I held off on that until I found there was a proper reprint. The old version had long been recalled and gone. Finally bought that. That was $24. All right. Next up in Blu-rays. Yes, you're going to laugh. I got that Studio 54, the director's cut on Blu-ray. I have the theatrical on DVD. It doesn't have that theatrical on there, just director's cut. There is a Blu-ray with both versions. It's only available in the UK, and it's gone. It's nearly 10 years old, so never mind. I have to deal with that. I was talking to our friend Mulder over at Watch This Movie about this. He picked up on my recommendation, and he came back to me and said, wow, it's not good at all, because it's got a lot of alternative footage on there. The theatrical version of this film, which I saw at the drive-in on Christmas Eve 98, had a lot of reshoots, about 40 minutes of reshoots.
Jeez.
Which the director was not happy with. The studio, Miramax, went back and made him do a bunch of reshoots. He didn't like it. He finally got to do his director's cut about 15 years later or something. And the end result was this. I've not seen it, but I want to. I'm looking forward to. Oh, fuck. You should think about prepared, Stuart. Next up, Kojak.
Oh, yeah. Series. It's going on my Amazon basket.
$50 from eBay, actually. Brand new, still sealed. Very, very trepidatious about ordering from eBay. But looked up the client and the seller on there. They just had, you know, 100% rating across the board, over 12 or 13,000 reviews. So I'm like, okay, they're here in Melbourne. Actually got it pretty quick. It was here within 4 days. And that set used to retail for about 110 because it's 30 discs, all 5 seasons. It did disappear or has disappeared. Obviously, these are overstocks that they've got. And they just pissed them off at $50 a pop. So I thought I'd better get it because once that goes, another one. So now I'll be real quick.
Kojak's a great show, by the way, Stu. Kojak's amazing. I love that show.
Oh, it's fantastic. I agree. It's great.
It's probably my favorite cop show. It's way better than the goddamn Wire, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is a cop show because Columbo is more of a, yeah, it's a detective.
But he's a cop. He's a police inspector. So you can
call
it
a police inspector,
show.
Yeah.
Yeah, Columbo's fantastic too, but Kojak is like a cop show where you see them in the police station and Kojak says, all right, we got to go, you know, let's get out of here.
Yeah, and it's better than Starsky and Hutch. I know you like Starsky and Hutch. I've got that complete series too, but people don't realize, they just think that Kojak's actually this really nice, you know, guy who's got lollipops and who loves your baby, but he's actually a bit of a bastard in the show. He's a... Yeah. You know, hard as nails cop. Anyway, next up, I'll whip through these CD releases I've picked up. These next two are vinyl replica CDs, which I love these things. They're actually, they're not the jewel case ones. They're just like a hard cardboard one, which is a replica literally of the vinyl as it was. First one is Iggy Pop's Party. Mm-hmm. I'll pick this up for $9 off of Amazon, brand new. Not a bad album. It's a bit hit and miss, but I like this era of Iggy Pop from 79 to around 81, 82, quite a bit. Another one. This is my favorite Iggy Pop album. See that? New Values. I'll hold up.
Oh, yeah.
A bit.
Oh,
it's
yeah. Okay.
5'1", right?
5'1", and my other all-time favorite song on there, or actually all-time favorite song, not 5'1". What's the other one? Fucking thing. I'm Bored. That's it. Yeah. That's my favorite Iggy Pop song. Yeah, these things are really cool. And I've got these actual, it's going to sound really stupid, but I've got these actual, what do they call those things, Hunter? The static sleeves that you put the record in?
Oh, the, yeah. The
thing sleeves? That you slip the record into.
Yeah, this, I just call it a sleeve. I don't know what you,
yeah, yeah. They've actually got mini size ones that fit these. I've got about, a couple of hundred of these.
I've got one like that for David Bowie's Aladdin Sane.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. I don't know who put this out. I don't think it's Rock Candy. I think it's another company. I don't know. Don't worry about that. These are just a bunch of other things. 3-pack, 3-disc, best disco album in the world ever. Fantastic. All original songs, not re-records or nothing. Thank goodness. 60 tracks, disco. Can't go wrong. Grab this one as well. Oh, that was $13. The Iggy Pop one was 11 for new values. This was $8. Pure Disco number 3.
Nice.
Because it's got some other songs in there that was not on the best disco album ever one. This one's an oddity.
Those the best disco ones, they weren't pure enough for pure disco, but they weren't best enough for best disco.
That's right. And yeah. I'll take any disco I can get, my friend. This one is a strange one. I mean, it's great, but it's one that doesn't get talked about. And it's Wuthering Heights by Ferrara. It's an Italian disco album from 79. And I bought it for the song Love Attack, which I think is just so good. So catchy. But it's a six song album, which runs about 26 minutes. The first side is about 13, 14 minutes. And it's Wuthering Heights Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. It's actually a disco interpretation of the Wuthering Heights book story into a disco album. So that I got for $9. Yeah, very, very happy about that.
That's a cool album too. You, I posted on that, like you posted that link when I asked you about it. And I listened to it like that after, and I was like, this is pretty damn cool. The Italians knew how to do this stuff.
Yeah. First heard that song back in 1980. That's from 79, an album on Countdown. There was a guy on there at a Xanadu dance competition who danced to that. Was unreal. And also won the competition. And that will be the guy, I swear to God, who's cutting my hair on Saturday. He's now a hairdresser. It's the same guy. And last but not least, in keeping with the ghost theme, I picked up Ghost Infesta Massa Massa album, or it's called
Infestasimum, I think.
Infestasimum, yeah. I picked this up for $17 from memory. And yeah, not as bad as people say. It's actually pretty decent. It's not Opus Eponymous. It's not Meliora or even prequel, but it's a good listen.
Kind of I didn't know people didn't like it. I always thought it was pretty well liked.
Yeah. Oh, Year Zero is great. I think it's such a cool song.
Yeah, I think they're a band that just keeps getting better.
They do, and I am so excited about that next one coming out. We are blessed, really, with the stuff coming out in the next few months. We've got the Darkness new album in a week or so.
Which is very good. The new songs are awesome.
Yeah, they're great.
I think they've released four. I heard two, and I said, stop. If you keep hearing any more, you're gonna hear half the album before it gets released. And
every single song's a banger so far.
Oh, wow. Nice. I'm so looking forward to that one. Nashville Pussy just released a new album, which was a live one. That was really cool. Not got it yet, but I have heard it. And who else we got coming? Megadeth obviously is coming soon. And Ghost will be giving us an album soon. Yeah, oh, and Exodus have got a new album as well.
The best thing about the new Halloween movie is the song Ghost did for it.
Oh, well, yeah, Hunter's Moon. Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah.
It's out on a like a blood red vinyl 7-inch, a limited edition one.
Ooh.
It's not cheap. I think it's about $30, but that's going to be a collector's piece. I can tell you now.
I've never like heard them.
You really?
Yeah, I've never heard. And a lot of friends like them. People with different tastes in music. People who just like, you know, Tangerine Dream or whatever, they like them. It's strange, but
they sound like Blue Oyster Cult.
Mm. Oh, okay. Well, that's enough of a recommendation. I'm going to have to give them a shot.
Like the lead singer sounds like Buck Dharma.
Okay. Well, they can't go wrong that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which one should we point him towards, you reckon? Maybe go towards Prequel.
Prequel, the newest one.
Prequel?
Yeah.
Okay.
The latest one.
Yeah.
And then work your way back. They get a bit darker and heavier on their previous albums. Prequel's a lot more accessible.
Yeah. They're playing with a lot of different styles. Like there's some instrumental tracks. The one before that was it was the one that looks like Metropolis on the cover or something. It had
Meliora?
Meliora, yeah. That one's really solid.
Yeah, they must be really hugely popular because I think they played like the Budweiser Event Center up in Loveland, Colorado.
They're big.
Which is huge.
They're big. Okay. They are quite big. You know, they've won Grammys, you know, like
right.
I saw them open for Maiden when I saw them.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I've still not seen them. I missed them when they played here in March 2018. I just missed them. But they'll be back. And I reckon honestly that next Ghost album is gonna be massive. Prequel was the damn walls breaking. The next one will be huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah, the Dance Macabre song is infectiously catchy. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Same with the 7 inches of Satanic Panic single was really good as well.
Look up the music video, John, for Kiss the Go Oat.
Okay.
It's great.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
Did Zolly give them that title?
Maybe.
Okay. Just want to be sure.
Yeah. It's a fun video.
So that's it for me.
All right. Well, Stu, you said you wanted to take a break.
We will take a break now, and we will introduce our new segment. We alluded to it back on the Shadow of the Vampire episode. And we said, gee, wouldn't it be great if we could get Anthony Nesbitt on to do a weekly segment about British politics and news? Well, I asked Anthony, and initially he said no, only for the fact he was too nervous and had no confidence in himself. But I kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and he finally agreed to do it, and he sent us his first one, and it is glorious. So the segment that we'll be having every week from now on, we're running about 5 minutes, or whatever Anthony wants, 5 to 10 minutes tops, is called Rue Britannia. So R-U-E, as in Rue Britannia, Britannia has fallen, etc. And yeah, this will be a new segment along with the Whip Out Your Junk we'll have at the start of each episode from now on in. And yeah, we got the Nez finally joining the MMC weekly with this segment. So go, Anthony.
And now it's time for Rue Britannia with your foreign correspondent, the Nez.
This is your weekly briefing, and you are most welcome to it. In a move that will surprise, well, basically fuck all, the Tory government have announced that all UK Border Force vessels are to be replaced with a new £74 million fleet, a move welcomed by Labour lead and socialist millionaire Keir Starmer. There's no telling what amount of luxury and comfort illegal immigrants picked up by the UK Border Force will settle for these days, said the moral eunuch whilst visiting a London inner-city school stage production of Christiane F. But I dare hope they'll actually be joining the Labour Party en masse once they hit Dover, hitchhike to Leicester, and then open their own sweatshops. Meanwhile, Tory chairman Oliver Darden welcomed the move. It's a rich, fruity stunner of an immigration policy, said the 43-year-old messiah from Arrakis. We can't wait for the voters to get stuck in at the next general election, if we can summon up the moral courage to actually call one. Speaking of sweatshops, newly convicted Leicester East ex-Labour MP Claudia Webb stated that she has no intention of stepping down from Parliament and resigning, this after a conviction for threatening a woman with an acid attack, and this despite also accusing the judge and the jurors of racism after her conviction and before sentencing. Having been awarded a 10-week custodial sentence on suspension, having been also expelled from the Labour Party upon conviction, the convicted fug remains adamant that she will not only continue as an MP, but that she'll be setting herself on fire as a symbol of faux protest. If push comes to shove, I'll show these fuckers that a convicted black woman has what it takes to make it in a man's world, said the urban feminist who enjoys headbutting bowling balls in her spare time. For I am a woman, she screamed outside the court. Hear me, bore. Anyway, on a lighter note, which is to say grimmer than the remake of Dune, peers in the House of Lords began debating on whether or not to legalise euthanasia, as opposed to the youth of Sweden, or Greta Thunberg shortly, especially fitting how most of the laws are so old and so infirm now, they basically died years ago anyway. The pity for the public that they're actually still claiming expenses. Kind of akin to the Bond franchise in No Time to Die, which this week finally crawled over the $600 million mark out of a budget of $934 million, and which is befitting of Bond's death, especially given how it's now actually being marked by Eon Productions, who are holding a commemorative Viking funeral at a lake in Hyde Park. Dolly birds aren't allowed in accordance with woke these days, but by all means bring your own matches and paraffin. The ceremony culminates with Barbara Broccoli reciting from the Quran, whilst Michael G. Wilson will be landing via Union Jack parachute and singing a cover version of Too Drunk to Fuck by the Dead Kennedys. And on the subject of paganism, instantly Britain ego-loons continue their campaign of Gandhi-inspired piss-drinking disobedience by blocking off arterial roads in and out of London this week, a campaign that's increasingly making the government look increasingly ineffectual and weak, culminating in one of said loons super-gluing his hand to a police van. I'm having the time of my life, said 52-year-old soap dodger and professional activist Nick Satan. Indeed, it's my lifetime's ambition to emulate Gandhi for being hit by a truck on Friday afternoon on the M25. Where are my car keys? Meanwhile, the COP26 climate change conference in Glasgow was overshadowed this week by Swedish teen shouter Greta Thunberg spending the week impersonating the Pied Piper of Glasgow, marching the Glaswegian rat population over the edge of a landfill site. Give me what I want, or I'll give you a mad slur, said Greta, as she sat in the middle of a traffic island in Glasgow city centre. This whilst was explaining how she walked on water to travel from Stockholm to Glasgow. Besides, spending time playing with a Rubik's Cube surrounded by candles to summon up the Cenobites from hell in my spare time is a great way to reduce carbon emissions. Look into my eyes, she intoned. And finally, plans have been announced by Downing Street for the PM to make his acting debut. He's been cast in a cameo role in the upcoming remake of the 1979 Alan Clark classic, Scorn!
Right, we are back. Hopefully we haven't been kicked off of YouTube because of Nez. You know, hopefully we're still here. Broadcast is still going on. So it's my turn. I'm going to go through stuff I bought over the last month. So it's just kind of some here and there, some flotsam and jetsam. But the first thing I wanted to show is something that came randomly in the mail, and it made me very happy. It made my heart happy.
It's Romero.
No. Critics' Choice Video Catalog.
Oh, I get those.
Old school. Yeah, I was going, printings? Hey, what?
I thought they stopped printing magazines these days and catalogs.
I don't know. It's partnered with Kino Lorber. I guess it's because I order stuff from them. But yeah, I was thinking I might be a silent generation person and go through and circle stuff, you know.
Oh, I love catalogs. I'd take the printed ones any day over the crappy website.
Yeah, you know, just kind of thumb rolling through it, see what Charles Bronson movies they've got.
Right. Yeah. Well, their audience is boomer, so they like catalogs.
Boomers like cool. Boomers do like catalogs. My parents
like Critics'
catalogs.
Choice Video. Critics' Choice is basically a boomer company. They sell their own version of the Jungle Gym collection, but it only has like six movies, but they license that from Mill Creek, and it's an exclusive to Critics' Choice.
So I bought a few films. One of them, this is one I've never seen, but I've been on a Dracula kick. I watched the Lugosi one. I watched Nosferatu. I watched, what else did I watch? I watched like Vampire Hunter D and both of those movies, but I'd never seen Dracula with Frank Langella.
No. Never seen that either.
Yeah, I was like, hey, I've never seen this. So I thought I'd pick it up. Frank Langella, Laurence Olivier, you know.
I've heard it's underrated.
Yeah, I thought I'd check it out. You know, it's a big Dracula movie with actors I like, you know, thought I'd check it out.
Just be careful with that because there's been a lot of contentious issues with the color timing. It's had a few releases where the color timing has been really off and fans of the film have been screaming about it.
This is from Shout Factory, so the chances are they screwed it up. So they're like that company can't go a month without spilling spaghetti all over themselves.
Zolli reported it. That's already been pulled.
Yeah. Another one I got, I have this one on DVD, but I've been kind of slowly updating these to Blu-ray. Boris Karloff in Isle of the Dead.
That's a good one.
Val Lewton production. I've got Cat People on Blu-ray from Criterion. I've got Ghost Bedlam? Ship. I've got Ghost yet? Ship in Bedlam on a double feature.
Oh, Bedlam's so messed up, that film.
But I really want to get I Walked with a Zombie on Blu-ray, but I don't think it's out on Blu-ray. But I don't know. I haven't looked up into that.
Seems like that'd be the first one to come out.
I know.
Other than Cat People, you know.
I put my DVD in my PS4 and it wouldn't play it.
Yeesh.
So, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. What's the deal with PS4?
PS4? Why do they call it that?
So here's one I haven't seen, but I saw some clips from it in the Movies That Made Us episode about Halloween. Will Penny. This one stars Charlton Heston, and it has Donald Pleasance. And apparently they credited his performance in this as one of the reasons they wanted him for Dr. Loomis. And I thought that movie looks pretty good. So I picked it up. It was cheap.
It wasn't the performance in the Columbo film. Where he's the winemaker. That would have sold me on anything if I was a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, Will Penny is very good. It's actually got a sad ending, kind of like Shane. So
I like the story about him being in Great Escape and him trying to give John Sturges tips on what concentration camps were like. And John Sturges was like, yeah, yeah. And people were went, no, he actually was in one as a POW. And he was like, oh, yes. Well, in that case. Okay.
Like John McCain.
Yeah, exactly.
Then he played a Nazi in Watch Out, We're Mad.
That's right. He did. So here's one I haven't seen. I picked this one up, but apparently Walter tells me they screwed up the transfer. So I don't know. Incredible Shrinking Man, the Criterion.
Oh, I've not grabbed the. I meant to grab the Australian version by Umbrella, but I'm curious to see what transfers they've used.
I need to watch it. It says 4K digital restoration, but Walter said it. He's not happy with it, so we'll see. I described the premise of this movie. What
would he say? What was wrong with it? With the framing?
He said it waxy look. He said, I don't quite know what that means, but you know, I'll check it out. Maybe.
So Hunter, did he tweet at Criterion and he hashtag it restore the Snyderverse?
Yeah. Restore the Snyderverse. Criterion can make this right by delivering us the Ayer cut.
He started that, right? Didn't he start the whole restore the Snyder cut?
I don't know if he did or not. But I'm going ahead. Somebody on Twitter did some Twitter forensic work and found that Walter was the earliest person to tweet about the Snyder cut.
Right.
So I think Walter did it.
Someone on Twitter got too much time on their hands as well, it sounds like, if they're going to be digging that far back into something.
Yeah. Here's another Criterion one. John, you can tell me if this movie's any good. I just blind bought this one. Throwdown, Johnny Toe.
I like it, and I'm not a big Johnny Toe fan, and I like that movie.
Johnny Toe is really hit or miss for me. Sometimes his movies are really good, and sometimes they're just boring and stupid. And you know, he's kind of like Takashi Miike a little bit, but I think he's a little more consistent.
Right, that's a movie with judo is basically the fighting style used, and I think we have a lot of listeners who I made a joke about it one time, and it turned out to be true. I said like a bunch of our listeners probably own jujitsu dojos or schools, and turns out we've actually got hardcore fans that don't run like these fight factories and grappling schools and places like Arizona and New Mexico and up in the Northwest and everything, and they teach shooting lessons and stuff. So I surprisingly nailed our audience accurately. I think they would enjoy Throwdown quite a bit.
Yeah, so go check that out. I'm looking forward to watching it.
It does grappling like a kung fu movie or something, and it's really cool. He actually came up with a new way to film judo where it's exciting. But a lot of people didn't like this movie, but I recommend it. I actually enjoyed it.
Well, I picked that one up.
Okay, I'm going to have to pick it up. That's a good film.
This is one that I've bought several times, but one good turn deserves another. This one goes on the Arrow shelf. Dune Steelbook. RIP Dune
shelf now, huh?
What?
You're a Steelbook shelf now, huh?
Yeah. I got a few more Steelbooks here, maybe one. But one,
John, as if Arrow wasn't enough, it now has to be Arrow Steelbooks.
Yeah.
Mr. Steelbook shelf. There you go.
The only other Arrow Steelbook I have is Weird Science.
What?
Now, that's quality.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, RIP Dean Stockwell, by the way.
Right.
Who plays Dr.
Oh, he died. In this film. Okay.
Yeah.
Terrific character actor. Very long career.
In dreams.
In dreams. here's one. I've been kind of getting into Paul Morrissey a little bit. Like I really enjoyed. I watched Blood for that's a Dracula movie I forgot to mention. I watched Blood for Dracula. I thought it was fantastic.
Really?
So funny. I love the idea. Dracula, he needs virgin blood to survive in this movie. And he goes to this family that he thinks is very pious, but it turns out they're all the daughters are getting down with Joe D'Alessandro's character. Fletch. Yeah, and he keeps preying on these girls, and just pukes everywhere, and he's like, the blood of these whores is killing me. Just, Dracula can't find a decent chaste woman anywhere in Italy.
How does it rate on the Catholic level?
Oh, it's you know, Paul Morrissey.
He's Catholic.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. I know that's why you bought it. It's okay. You can admit it here.
It's okay. He's one of those very odd characters. I think he's closet gay, probably. The way he talks and the way he, the way his outlook just feels that way to me. But you know, he's one of these guys who's really right wing, really Catholic. But it kind of comes like, and he said all of his movies were making fun of young people and how ridiculous they are. But anyway, one of his movies got a Blu-ray release. It's a Sherlock Holmes movie, Hound of the Baskervilles, with Dudley Moore and Peter Cook. I don't know if any of y'all have seen that.
No, haven't even heard of it.
I saw parts of it on TV when I was a kid, like back at 83 or so.
So is Sherlock Holmes...
It didn't seem very funny, but it was apparently a very popular film.
Was it a Derek and Clive version of Sherlock Holmes, was it? Or just...
I guess.
More Peter Cook.
Yeah, I think this was like Paul Morrissey getting a big job, and he said he didn't get along with Dudley Moore. He said he liked Peter Cook, but yeah, I was just interested in watching it. I haven't seen it yet, but I also enjoy all things Sherlock Holmes. Like, you know, if it's a Sherlock Holmes movie, I'll watch it.
They're putting out a 4-disc Sherlock Holmes Blu-ray box set in the near future. But they're only doing 4 films. I mean, those films are what, 60, 75 minutes each tops?
I've got the Basil Rathbone Blu-ray set.
These are the ones made before those with what's his name? Arthur Wittner or something like that. I forget the name.
But 4 discs for 4 movies? I mean, that's strange.
It's very cheap here in the States if you find it on Amazon. And I've thought about getting it just to pre-order it because I've never seen those. I tried to watch them on streaming, but the prints that are out there right now are terrible. Mm-hmm. So maybe restored, I can appreciate a little better. They don't have the best reputation, but, you know, curiosity drives me to seek it out, watch it anyway.
Does anyone know if the Dick Tracy movies are on Blu-ray yet, the old ones from the 40s?
No, I have them on DVD.
Me too, but they're awful. They're really, really bad quality.
Oh, really? Get the VCI set.
That's what I have.
They look good. They look pretty good. Yeah. They have commentaries and a couple of bonus features. Yeah. They're actually nice.
The set I have is good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So this next one I got at the Barnes & Noble Criterion sale. I actually, my wife, like all women, loves true crime. And so for her birthday, I bought her the Citizen Kane of true crime books. In Cold Blood, and I'd never seen the movie.
It's In Cold Blood by Truman Capote,
right
here, directed by Richard Brooks. It's a book I wrote about crime.
Yeah, so, you know, if you want to make that Capote sequel, Philip Seymour Hoffman's dead, call me, I can do the voice. But yeah, I've never seen this one. I've always wanted to. I've heard it's really good. Any of y'all seen it?
No,
I have not. I have an interesting story about the casting that I heard from James Ellroy that I've never seen published anywhere.
Oh, go on.
Originally, the two actors that were cast for the role of the two killers were, I'm trying to remember exactly, it was David Carradine and Luke Askew. And they were told by Richard Brooks or whoever cast them, do not tell anybody you got the part. Do not. He said, if you tell people, you won't have it anymore. So I think you can figure this out. Mm-hmm. They both go to a bar together.
Oh, no.
Rub their mouths. Next day, they were replaced. So Carradine could have had a jump on stardom 5-6 years earlier than he did with Kung Fu. And also Luke Askew really never broke through. He was always a character actor or playing thugs or whatever. Would have been a huge opportunity for him.
That's an interesting story.
Yeah. And I've never seen that anywhere. It's just something Ellroy, I guess, heard. And, you know, the various Hollywood lore.
Mm-hmm. Good old alcohol.
Yeah.
It's ruined lives and careers.
Yes.
Oh, it's ruined one here of a politician. He's gone. And he had a really, really burgeoning career. Crashed his car 2 weeks back, a week and a half back. Blind drunk into the house right near a kid's bedroom. Gone.
Yeah, they'll do it.
And he had a really promising career. He could have been premier of this state, but he blew. He knows. He goes, I messed up. Now he's quitting booze when it's too late.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Cautionary tale.
People. Yeah. I guess he has a career on the speaking circuit at prisons and churches, you know.
No, he might get a gig with the Sky News here, which is the, not the British Sky News, which is very left. The Sky News here is very right.
No, okay.
He may get a gig on that.
So, another steel book, Earwig and the Witch. Y'all heard of this?
I've heard of it. Yeah,
I've seen it.
What did you think of it, John?
I took my family to see it at the Alamo Draft House. I was really kind of confused by it. I think my son pretended to be interested in it. I think my wife was a little baffled by it, but she didn't want to admit it because we were totally, you know, we were watching the Miyazaki hockey movies together, whatever. I guess it's a family tradition in America now, and that's something. But it uses, I think it's the first Studio Ghibli movie to use that three-dimensional CGI animation. Everybody else is doing. Hey, guess what? They're not really good at that.
Yeah, I got it.
Almost nothing happens, I swear, until like the end. And even then, you didn't even need it. You didn't even need to see the ending.
Yeah, so I've been collecting all the Studio Ghibli movies. And this was one I was reluctant to pull the trigger on because I don't like art. And I also don't like the idea of Studio Ghibli doing 3D CGI animated movies.
They've made a terrible mistake.
And you know, like, I was able to overcome that with the new Lupin the Third movie because it's awesome.
Yeah,
but normally 3D CGI animation is a turnoff. I love hand-drawn animation.
Right.
3D CGI was a neat novelty for a little while. I'm tired of it. I want it to go away forever.
Yeah. The Lupin movie did it great in the last few years.
Spielberg's 10-10 movie is also quite good.
That's pretty decent.
But Pixar films, DreamWorks films, those are filmmaking by algorithm.
Yeah, they're terrible.
I feel like all artistry has been removed from those movies. There are some good ones. I think WALL-E's great. You know, some of the ones I've seen are pretty good, but most of them are overrated trash. They're terrible.
Polar Express. Yeah.
You know what? I can't get over the Uncanny Valley with that movie. It just weirds me out, but I know a lot of people love it. But Earwig and the Witch, it's directed by Gorō Miyazaki, who's Hayao Miyazaki's son.
Yeah.
And I just always think of when he put out Tales of Earthsea and Hayao Miyazaki was like asked what he thought of it. And he was like, yeah, my son made a piece of crap. He just like publicly, you know, tore it up.
Jeez.
Hey, every time I hear that title, I always think of Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Me too. I was like, Hedwig and the Angry Inch?
Yeah, yeah, it was a terrible, it's a terrible title. It's based on a kid's book or something.
Yeah,
or
it is.
I did not care for it. Maybe it has fans. It is probably the lowest rated Studio Ghibli movie on a site like Letterboxd, I would say. But since we saw that, we've watched Spirited Away and we watched Howl's Moving Castle, and both are infinitely better than that film.
Well,
it's not even close.
The wife and I, you know, I was trying to get her to watch Studio Ghibli stuff because anime, she's like, no, I don't like it. It weirds me out.
She thought it'd be like Grandizer trying to kill Guy King. Giant
She's thinking it's going to be like people yelling and giant robots and explosions and Dragon Ball Z. But I said, no, try a Studio Ghibli movie. I said, you got to try a Miyazaki film. I tried showing her Castle of Cagliostro, not into it, which was weird because that's a great movie. But she just didn't vibe with Lupin, I guess. But then I said over Halloween, I said, let's watch Kiki's Delivery Service. And she really liked it. And I hadn't seen that in years, and I thought that was a great coming of age film.
Like, yeah, we watched that and loved it. We thought that was just terrific.
It captures adolescence so well, because like the stuff that she does things and reacts to boys in ways that are so like it doesn't make any sense to a grown rational person, but it's perfect. It's stuff right. Teenagers do. Like,
you know, people forgot their youth and how awkward and weird that could be.
Yes, it is a movie that is really in touch with how strange it is to when you're a young person and you're starting to try to assert independence and trying to find out what you want to do. And it's really good at communicating that and capturing that. It captures that feeling. And I love the dub with Phil Hartman and Kirsten Dunst and all those people. It was really good. But yeah, so I've been on a Studio Ghibli kick. And so I was filling in the holes in my collection in those steelbooks. And so that was the last one I bought, because I just was like, oh, it just looks so ugly. But I went, whatever, I'll go ahead and buy it. It's that completionist thing. Anyway, moving on. Stuart, I have an Umbrella release here.
Oh, straight from Straya.
Ain't no game.
Oh.
Super Mario Brothers. Got to do the dinosaur.
Hey.
Yeah. I was very excited about this. It has the work print cut and some making of. It's pretty good Mario Brothers release. I imported this because I went, oh, it's got a lot of good stuff on there.
Where did you get it from?
I ordered it from, I think I ordered it from Umbrella, if I'm not mistaken. I think I ordered it straight from them. Because I saw that was coming out. But yeah, I'm super. I watched it the other night. And
I drive past.
Does this mean we have to do the long threatened show?
A long threatened show on Mario Brothers?
And we threaten that forever.
Maybe.
That and Can't Stop the Music and another Ed Byrne show, I think.
Yeah, the another Ed Byrne show has to happen with Zolli.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since he's got new stuff out, you know.
I drive past that Umbrella office all the time for work. It's all the time. I think, only at night, obviously.
Yeah. I've got one more, okay? And this is one I'm excited about. I got this one today, okay? A teacher asked me, what is the best Hamlet movie to show to high school
students?
And I said, I said, Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet is too long. Laurence Olivier's Hamlet is too dry.
No.
Most other Hamlets are too modern and weird. Right?
Yeah.
So I said, what you need is Mel Gibson and Franco Zeffirelli's Hamlet. But that movie is hard to find.
Yeah.
And it's not streaming anywhere. I think like you can stream it through Spectrum if you... you know, pay $5 to Spectrum or something, whatever. I looked on Amazon, $50. Called the store with used movies. They had it for $6. I got Hamlet, Franco Zeffirelli, Mel Gibson, Glenn Close, Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh,
Warner Brothers Snapcase.
Yeah. Love
boy.
It.
Better than Triceratops.
Oh,
done from a VHS video master.
Ooh, and it has special features: Hamlet, an actor's journey. Mel Gibson introduces the movie. A making of documentary. Mel Gibson, to be or not to be.
To be.
Yeah.
There is no not with Mel. Yeah. It doesn't exist.
So yeah, pretty stoked. So I found this one today. Making a phone call. I really liked this movie when I saw it in high school.
I think it's great. I saw it. Didn't catch it in theaters. I caught it on VHS. Yeah.
Loved it in the theater.
Actually, yeah.
Really,
I went, this is the one to show to your students. Because, you know, when you do Shakespeare, the first time you do Shakespeare, anything, you kind of need the straightforward period thing.
Yeah.
Then you can get weird with it, like Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, which is great. You know, you can get weird with it. But if you go out the gate weird, like students won't get it. You know, they're just like, what's going on? I'm looking forward to the Joel Cohen's Macbeth film. That looks pretty interesting. That's coming out. Anyway, but yeah, Hamlet with Mel Gibson. Seek it out if you haven't seen it and you like Shakespeare. It's very good. Franco Zeffirelli. I mean, he's...
We've got to do an episode on it one day. We've got to.
Yeah, and he directed Olivia Hussey.
Yes, he did.
Juliet.
How is he not in prison? Wasn't she 15 or something during the making of that?
I think so. I think she, yeah. Yeah.
It's like Olivia Dabo in Bolero. She's only like 14. Ooh, she has like full frontal nudity.
Oh my goodness.
John Derek.
Even when I was a kid, like seeing that on Cinemax when I wasn't supposed to, I was like, what the hell? Wait a minute. Isn't she underage?
Did you run up and try and pause it at all?
We didn't have a VCR. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I have a friend who used to teach high school English, and you know, they were watching Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet, and he said someone ran up to the front of the class to try to pause on the nudity.
Yeah, you said it during the Psycho episode.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh yeah, I brought that up.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, it is Olivia Hussey. So.
Mm. Yeah. It's hard to blame somebody for losing their...
Right.
Their frontal lobe, you know.
Right.
All right, that's my stack, y'all. That's my junk, you know.
All right. So anyway, this is a indication of what it's going to be like each week. Obviously, not going to be a full 1 hour episode. Just 10 minutes.
We'll probably go pretty quick, you know, just stuff we bought this week, you know.
Yeah, and you know, there might be times where I've got nothing. On YouTube or Hunter pretty much buys something each week, but if there's nothing, I got nothing this week, move on.
And if it's something embarrassing, I bought nothing,
then why is it on your shelf to begin with?
it's like I bought nothing but trouble.
Bought nothing.
I know. I'm just saying that would be something embarrassing that just got re-released.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't admit to that. That's the worst movie.
Money. Burn the money on the screen in front of us if you're doing that.
Jesus. Buy crypto instead, Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got my nothing but trouble NFTs.
Yes, call Garrow and get some advice. It's like he's been doing well. So
yeah.
That's a man I'd list to. I found out my old Kempo teacher is now doing cryptocurrency. He says I'm buying my next card like tomorrow with the crypto profits. I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah, the Bitcoin, you idiots.
Somebody, I had all this money wrapped up in NFTs, but then someone right clicked them. I'm ruined.
Ah, darn it. Darn, Hunter. You are the right click king.
Yeah.
King of the right click decisions. Jeez.
All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up. You got anything else, boys?
No, we're good.
All right.
I'll be better presented next week because this fucking... So this mop will be gone. Yeah. Hallelujah. Come on. Bring it on Saturday.
Well, you know, we hope you enjoyed this first video episode. And, you know, many, many thanks to Lorez and Hans for coming on. And the show didn't pan out because of technical problems. But go check out their show. It's called Movies. Look up Low Res Wonder Bread. That's Wonder with WU. And check out their movie, Mass State Lottery. It looks really cool. It's not out yet, but they're still shooting it. But it looks awesome. And yeah, go check them out. Give them some love because they gave their time to our show. And it got screwed up. And we feel bad.
Man, that was an absolute blinder of an episode. It was
good.
So good.
Yeah, it was really good.
We did talk about doing Halloween Kills with those boys on with us. And
yeah, we did.
We know we got this right. That'll be good.
Yeah, we've ironed out the kinks. We know what went wrong. So, you know.
It happens.
It's happened before. It'll probably happen again.
This is the last time.
All right, y'all. Well, with that, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
Yeah. Peace out.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.